I've been waiting on this for a week. I don't know about you, but let's say it together. It's the Optimist Creed. Promise yourself to be so strong that nothing, and I do mean nothing, can disturb your peace of mind. Promise yourself to talk on health, happiness, and prosperity to every single person you meet today. Promise yourself to make all your friends and family feel like there's something in them, something worthwhile, because there is. Promise yourself to look at the sunny side of everything and make your own optimism come true in your life. Promise yourself to think only of the best, to work only for the best, and to expect in your life only the best. Promise yourself to be just as enthusiastic about my success as you are about your own, and forget about mistakes you've made in the past. You've learned from them, will not repeat, and you are pressing on to your greater achievements in the near future. Promise yourself to wear cheerful countenance at all times and give so much time to your own self-improvement, you simply do not have time to criticize me. Promise yourself to be too large for worry, too noble for anger, too strong for fear, and in life too happy to permit the presence of trouble, because you, and yes, I do mean you, are an optimist. Welcome aboard. Live from Homer, Alaska, I'm Chris Story, and this is On Top of the World, Radio on Purpose. Remember, I spent Memorial Day yesterday probably like you, surrounded by family. But never far from my mind was the fortune of freedom that you and I enjoy, that we have, that we've received as a gift. How somewhere in a far-off land, or even here on our own homeland, are the memories of men and women who gave their all, gave everything, their life, their blood and treasure, so that you and I could be free. Like no other people on earth before us. That freedom came at a price, and the price was paid for me and you, truly the ultimate in paying it forward. Yes, we remember. Where in the world are you supposed to be? What if I told you it's right here and right now, where you are in this moment in time and right here, exactly right here? Every now and then you meet somebody who's so content and so peaceful, almost like they're one with everything. You ever wonder, where does that come from? Is that an inner knowing? Is it some magical, mystical work that they've done? A tapping into something that may or may not be available to you? Maybe. But keep in mind, that person that you're looking at might be looking at you and thinking, oh, they've got it all figured out. Yeah, you have it all figured out. Where you are right here, right now, is in fact where you are supposed to be. Now, maybe you've missed some opportunities. Maybe you took a path less traveled or didn't. Maybe you took the well-trod path and wish you hadn't. Maybe you followed somebody else's idea of what your life should look like. However the winding road took you to where you are, here you are. Embrace the spot. Embrace this spot right here, right now, the one you occupy. You are right where you're supposed to be. How do I know? Because here you are. You're listening to On Top of the World Radio on Purpose. Christopher Storr here along with Mr. David Webb. Coming up in just a moment, I want to introduce you or reintroduce you to a friend. His name is John David Mann. He's got a brand new thriller coming out. You're going to want to hear about it right here on Top of the World. Stick around. Listening to On Top of the World Radio on Purpose. Christopher Storr here along with Mr. David Webb, the Eagle high atop Diamond Ridge at KPEN and KGTL, courtesy of Horizon Wireless. They're fantastic. I know you're thinking, of course, Chris, they're sponsors to your show. You know why Horizon Wireless is a sponsor of the show? Because we love them. They're that good. We went to them and said, hey, let's get together. Let's put this thing together. And we've been working together for years. Love Horizon Wireless, 226-3130, 226-3130. the best wireless connectivity you're going to find on the Southern Peninsula. Well, John David Mann, New York Times best-selling author, and you know, he's beyond that. He's an all-around great storyteller, both in person, in this interview, as you'll hear, but also on the page. And he's just phenomenal. Well, John joins me here to discuss his latest upcoming thriller called Blind Fear. Here's John David Mann. You write everything. I mean, I've said this of you before, but you could rewrite the phone book and I would go, oh, this is more interesting than I thought it would be. You've got a real gift of story. I remember hearing Bob Berg for the first time talk about The Go-Giver, and he mentioned your name and he said, but really, truthfully, John David Mann created the story. These were my teachings and everything, but John is the story, and you weave an amazing story. You do that in your parables and now in your novels, and you have a new novel coming out. But I mean, first of all, I hate the question about where do the stories come from, but for you, John, what kind of space do you have to go into in your mind to start weaving a story? Where do you go?
You know, I'm going to get to that circuitously. First, I'm going to say that I was just teaching this to my class last night. The distinctions between fiction and nonfiction are a lot fuzzier than they seem. I mean, there's a lot more overlap. Every great book of nonfiction has a lot of fiction in it, a lot of storytelling in it. Every great book of fiction has a lot of facts and figures and details and what you'd call nonfiction in it. And I think that great books, fiction, nonfiction, and for that matter, great blog posts, great articles, great anything, they're driven by this impulse to tell stories, to tell stories that resonate with our lives. So what place do I go to? I go to this overstuffed chair in the corner of my room with a blank pad of paper at 5 o'clock in the morning and a pen and a cup of hot tea and try to make my mind as blank as I can, which isn't very blank. Bunch of stuff floating around in there and say, okay, what do you got? What's up? Are the fish biting? And if so, what are they? I'm ready. And, you know, I think one of the hardest things for me in writing is to escape the gravitational pull of stuff I've already written or stuff I already think or stuff I've already drafted in a book I'm working on right now and just be open to possibilities I hadn't thought of and just kind of let her rip.
Why pen and paper? Does that do something? Does it activate a different part of your mind? Because a lot of people are thinking, well, surely 50 Shades of Grey was written on her BlackBerry phone. And then you've got also, not to compare you, but I'm just saying, there's so much technology. Why does John David Mann retreat to the cave and find a chisel and a stone? That's I find it fascinating.
Yeah. I tried to write a book on some raspberries, but that wasn't the same thing. Chisel and a stone. Now, that's a great question, Chris, because what you said is absolutely what it is. It activates a different part of my brain. I don't know the neurology of it. We could get into right brain and left brain and I don't know, whatever, but here's how it is for me. If I sit down at my laptop, that's great for banging stuff out. For taking a chunk of, you know, 2, 3, 4, 6, 8, 1200 words that I've already done and expanding it, editing it, moving stuff around. I write, you know, 90% of what I do, 95% of what I do on my laptop. And I can't fathom these guys like Joe Hill, Stephen King's son, one of my favorite novelists, like his dad, writes books on, no, King works on a laptop and on a computer, but Hill writes these books in notebooks with his pen. I can't imagine doing that. I could never write a whole book with a pen. My handwriting is so awful that I can't read what I write myself sometimes. But here's what I do with a pen that I can't seem to do with my fingers and a keyboard the same way, is I catch on to the tail of some wisp of a new idea I hadn't thought of before. I compare it sometimes to trying to coax butterflies to alight in your hand or to put smoke in your pocket. It's like trying to catch this next scene or this next dialogue or this next chapter idea or just this next book idea, trying to kind of catch onto it and get it onto a page. the initial impulse, this I got to do with my hands, like it's a craft. Moving a pen in my clumsy way on a piece of paper.
So you and Brandon Webb have written a lot of books together, and your newest is called Blind Fear, and that's what we're here to talk about. But Cold Fear, Steel Fear, these books you're collaborating, co-authoring with Brandon Webb, you've got to be able to channel suddenly going from, you know, nice, mild-mannered, somewhat of a superhero in the literary world, John David Mann, but now you're channeling a Navy SEAL. That's a collaborative process that you didn't see coming, probably, but how's it going now, three novels in?
Most of the best stuff in my life I didn't see coming, and I'm not exaggerating. I didn't see The Go-Giver coming. I thought I was going to be a screenwriter. I didn't see my wife coming. I didn't see, but yeah, you're right. I didn't see this coming at all, but I helped Brandon with his memoir. So I ghost wrote his memoir. It's called The Red Circle. This is over a decade ago. The New York Times bestseller list. It's the beginning of a great friendship and great, great working relationship. But we went on to write more nonfiction. We did some more memoirs of other SEALs he'd known. And in the process of that, I got to know a lot about the world of a Navy SEAL. Interviewed a ton of his colleagues and teammates and friends and their families and their siblings and their kids. And it was interesting. It was educational. And then Brandon said, hey, would you like to write a thriller with me? And I was like, whoa. Not only did I not see that coming, I always thought that writing a thriller would be like climbing a mountain. I mean, without oxygen. It was completely daunting to me. And this is not like a false modesty exaggeration thing. I really didn't see it. I said, how the hell do these guys do that? How do they keep all these threads in their brains? And how do they, you know, not, I couldn't imagine creating out of thin air a magnificently complex story, like a 400 page thriller. But a couple of years ago, I sat down and gave it a shot. And God, I love it. I just love it. It is a little bit like Clark Kent and the other guy. Because I've written all these books about really lovely people saying and doing really nice things and leaving you with lessons about leadership and success and great human values and stuff. And now I'm chasing serial killers across the tundra of Iceland. And it's pretty different, but I adore it. I adore it because it's such a huge canvas to paint the human condition. You know, it's you ask any crime writer, from Michael Connelly to Lee Child to anybody, what do they love about their novels, about their thrillers, their crime fiction, their mysteries? And it's the people, it's the characters, it's the human drama that you get to really, really go into it in depth.
Where are you taking Finn on this journey called Blind Fear?
So the very first Finn book 2 years ago was set on an aircraft carrier, which is an environment that's so foreign to most people. And you know this, Chris, I spent some time on the Abraham Lincoln, USS Abraham Lincoln. Brandon spent 6 months on that particular carrier, and we set the book there. So the whole book was, you know, part of it was to introduce Finn, this enigmatic character with missing memories and a traumatic past and ends up being a fugitive from the law, actually, the military law. And part of it was the chase of a serial killer, the mystery, the locker room mystery. But also a lot of it was exploring the carrier and introducing the reader to this weird, strange, foreign, alien world. And once we'd done that, we knew that if we were going to do more books in the Finn series, we had to find some fascinating environment in every book, or we'd let the readers down. We'd let ourselves down. We'd let Finn down. Book two was in Iceland, which is a really, really fascinating place, not just geographically, but also sociologically and in every way imaginable. And so for book three, we put Finn in Puerto Rico in the middle of a killer hurricane. And it starts out in the beautiful little paradise island of Vieques off the east coast of Puerto Rico, which is a lovely place to vacation. It's unspoiled. It's just magnificent. and it's got this horrible, ugly past. The U.S. took over Puerto Rico as a territory, you know, over 100 years ago, and then proceeded to bomb the crap out of it. They used, the U.S. Navy used Vieques as literally as target practice, throwing the worst stuff they had, you know, napalm and depleted uranium shells and just like everything for decades. And, you know, there's still stories of elevated cancer levels on the island. And, you know, it's a traumatized place. And the more I got into Puerto Rico and its history and its kind of its status in the world in relation to the U.S. and in relation to the rest of the world, it's just such a fascinating place. In many ways, Puerto Rico is like an abandoned child. And so abandoned children kind of became a theme in the whole book. Finn's own abandoned childhood, and there were two kids, literally children, in the book. Book opens with two kids on the beautiful paradisical beach in Vieques, who all of a sudden face something awfully scary and disappear from the face of the earth. So yeah, we entered another alien territory. It ends, of course, it culminates in a ferocious hurricane that Finn has to battle single-handedly in a little fishing boat.
It's very Hemingway-esque worthy. That is cool. And I love that.
The young man in the sea.
Yeah, right against the sea. And I love the idea of the character. You talked about the characters and stories, and obviously the USS Abraham Lincoln, Iceland, and now Puerto Rico are characters in your novels, and you do an amazing job of drawing people in. It just draws you in instantly, and you begin to care about things that things that I never thought I'd care about before. I mean, it's not that I don't care about the Navy, it's just I never thought I'd care about what happens on a carrier, but it is fascinating. And in your books, you have this way of weaving all that together with a really interesting story. It's not cold at all, even though it's called, you know, Cold Fear. It's not cold. It's amazing. And everything you've done with Brandon is laudable. And I hope that people run out and get the book, which is called Blind Fear, obviously, wherever books are available. When's the pub date?
July 18th.
All right. So no matter when you're listening to this, July 18th, 2023, otherwise just get it. And of course, John David Mann is an author. You want people to pre-order this, yeah, right?
Yeah, ideally. It would be wonderful for us. The more people pre-order, the more it kind of boosts the Amazon algorithms, which simply means it gets put in front of more people. Mm-hmm. It gives us the opportunity to show more people our wares, our stories. Obviously, we want as many people to know about these stories as possible. Finn's whole saga, and it is a saga. This is part three, but it ain't done yet, is really, to me, it's a really gripping, engaging story. And everybody I know who's read the books is like, I have got to find out what happens to him next. They care about more about Finn than they practically care about their next door neighbors.
The website is John David Mann, double N, by the way, johndavidmann.com. The man, the myth, the legend, and the best New York Times best-selling author, John David Mann. Thank you so much. And I just encourage everybody to pre-order or order wherever you are in the world right now, Blind Fear by Brandon Webb and John David Mann. Thank you so much for your time, your information, and the work you put into the world.
Thank you, Chris. This is my favorite radio show on the planet.
What's John David Mann's favorite radio show? This one, On Top of the World, Radio on Purpose. If you're interested in learning to write better, or as John puts it, write gooder, he does have a course available, and it's fascinating. I think you might be interested. If you want to hear more about that, I did a little bit of an interview with him specifically on his course available, and you can go to my podcast. Go to ilovehomeralaska.com/podcasts, ilovehomeralaska.com/podcasts, and under On Top of the World Radio, you'll find a 7 or 8 minute conversation with John about his writing course. I think you'll find it worthy. Thank you for being here. We've got a lot more to come. Stick around to the top of the world. We'll be right back. You're listening to On Top of the World Radio on Purpose. Christopher Story here. If you want to learn more about what it is we do here on Top of the World, our website is ilovehomeralaska.com. ilovehomeralaska.com. Make up your minds already. You've heard the expression, make up your mind. You actually have three minds. to make up. Your subconscious mind, your conscious mind, and your super conscious mind, the lesser known, the super conscious. So first of all, the subconscious mind, probably the most obvious, we all know, it's just pure power. Your subconscious mind is moving constantly, working overtime constantly. You heard John David Mann describe sitting down in an overstuffed chair with a pen and paper trying to create a blank space in his mind. It's almost impossible with your subconscious mind running rampant. It's kinetic energy, ready to be harnessed. It's like a power plant, a generator, if you will, that's creating electricity and doesn't care what you use it for. You could power a light bulb. You could cook or heat your home. You could fry a man in an electric chair with the generated power from this power plant. It's neutral. It's a neutral force that you have to harness. How? How do you harness it? Well, you harness that power of your subconscious mind with your conscious mind. That's the conductor, if you will. It's an orchestra in front of you, and you're conducting it with your conscious mind. It's the sense of the world in real time. The conscious mind delegates to the subconscious, determines what the horsepower under the hood is going to be doing and working for. You know you have to consciously direct it, hence the conscious mind. Then you have the superconscious mind. Now, this is your ability to tap into the universal consciousness, referred to by Florence Scovel Shinn as God mind, a source of creativity, meaning, life, the source of all life, the place where inspiration lives, divine ideas, guidance, and inner knowing, intuition lives here in the superconscious mind. It's not random thoughts cobbled together or slammed together in your subconscious mind. Mm-mm. This is your superconscious mind. Now, you can use or not use your subconscious mind, and it'll be working all the time. If you leave your superconscious mind dormant, that's where it will stay. It's a little bit like thinking about a computer in your house, and it's over in the corner, sitting on a desk. There's a chair, a little lamp by it, but nobody's turned that computer on in a long time. Now, that computer has access to the internet, but until you go pull the chair out, take a seat, flip on the little switch to the lamp, power up the computer, wait for it to boot. Until you consciously do this, it will sit there dormantly. But once you are there, you're on the super highway of the super conscious mind. Don't leave it just powered down. Tap into your God mind. Tap into the greater consciousness that is waiting for you. Each of us, you have a place here on earth that only you can fill. And to do so, you must utilize all three minds to create the good life for yourself.
So you think you can tell heaven from hell, blue skies from pain? Can you tell a green field from a cold steel rail? A smile from a veil? Think you can tell? Did they get you to train your heroes for ghosts, hot ashes for trees, hot air for a cool breeze, cold comfort for change? Did you exchange a walk on par?
There's probably more than three laws of forgiveness, but I want to talk about the three main laws of forgiveness and how they work in your life. And this can apply to forgiving others in your life that have transgressed you or perceptively have. Maybe they really haven't, but it's your perception, or yourself. I think that's probably the greatest place any of us can start towards a life of harmony, towards a life of meaning and contentment, is to forgive, and to start by forgiving yourself for things you've done, not done, left undone, meant to do the way you've lived to this moment in time. It's all behind you, and you're worth forgiving. And here's the three main laws of forgiveness from where I'm sitting here on top of the world. And the first is acceptance. Accepting you. You don't have to accept a circumstance as being unchangeable, but you do have to accept that that is the reality of today and find peace in that acceptance of yourself, where you are, how you got here, and also accept you have the power to go forward from here. This is a launching point for you. This is not the end. This is the beginning. Even if you feel you're in the middle or towards the end, acceptance of who you are and how you got here is the beginning of forgiveness. And the second law would be letting go of resentment. Resentment that is throttling down your progressive path to whatever it is and whoever you want to be. Resentment will do nothing but drag you down. It's like taking a little bit of poison every day for no good justifiable reason. Even if you've been harmed, the idea of holding resentment against others only erodes your own happiness and well-being and peace of mind and contentment and your ability to connect with others, spiritually connect. It's severed with resentment. So let go of resentment. And then I'd add to that empathy and compassion. Walk a mile in their shoes. Truly attempt to understand before you insist on being understood. Doesn't mean blind devotion to somebody else's way. But do you really know where they're coming from? Or are you simply beating them back with the tongue, your words, your expectation of them? And add to that compassion. Having compassion for other people, trying to truly understand before you're understood, will create compassion. And when combined with empathy and letting go of resentment and acceptance of who you are and where you are, truly will you have a life on purpose.
I was raised up by my mama alone. Worked herself into the grave, trying to make us a home. She never left South Carolina. Oh no. My old man didn't stick around to see me groan. He was long gone before the coffee got cold. Couldn't even know where to find him. Oh.
You're listening to On Top of the World. We've got the War of Words when we return. Stick around. You're listening to On Top of the World, Radio on Purpose. Chris Story here with two ideas and a dollar for you. Harvey McKay wrote a great book. I highly recommend it be in your library, called Swim with the Sharks Without Being Eaten Alive. In it, he said, if you give me a dollar and I give you a dollar, we each have a dollar. If you give me an idea and I give you an idea, we'll each have two ideas. And the beauty of this little philosophy works, the beauty of it is it works with so many things of your life. It works with praise. It works with love and giving. And I guess I would add to that, when you give, you cannot help but get. And you should give anyway.
I don't know my name. I don't play by the rules of the game. So you say, I'm just shining. Please.
so you say. I'm just trying to try.
There's a war happening right now. And the war is maybe in your head, as it is so many of us. And it's the war of words. The words you use are powerful. Not just the words you say either, but what you think. The words you think matter greatly. You get back what you put out, even in your thoughts. It comes back to you. What you say and what you think can smell of roses or rotten stink. So if you want more health in your life, speak of health. If you want more money, speak of wealth. You get to decide, and this is the beauty of life, and in this lies, I think, a lot of meaning. You decide whether you live in an abundant world or a world of lack. The war of words will be won or lost by you and you alone.
I was searching, I was looking for meaning. I was wondering, desperately trying only to see I have nothing missing. Who said I have to find who I am? Who said that I am lost to begin?
Bruce Lee, one of the greatest athletes in the world, one of the greatest actors too, and one of the most intentional people probably ever on the planet. He set out an intention to become a worldwide movie star, world-renowned movie star, and he achieved it. And he really didn't have any reason to think. Nothing about his background, nothing about his life suggested he was going to become a world-famous movie star, and yet he did. And he said that he suggested you be like water, a three-word philosophy that packed a powerful punch. Be like water, because water is non-resistant. Have you ever heard that expression, what you resist will persist in your life? So if you let go of your end of the stick, and that's all you can do, the other party, the other side, whatever you're resisting, will drop away. But if you wrestle with the stick, with them, and you try to free the stick, you're just going to struggle, and you're going to be stuck in the struggle. So Bruce got that expression from a Chinese belief that water is the most powerful element on earth. That's what they said. That's what the ancient Chinese have said, that water is the most powerful of all elements because it resists not. If you've ever been to the Grand Canyon, and if you do go, please don't take a selfie at the edge of the canyon. It's not worth it. Do you know how many people die every year falling into the Grand Canyon doing some stupid stunt with their phone trying to become famous? That's not you, I know. But if you've ever been to the edge of the Grand Canyon and looked in, you've seen the power of this non-resistant element at work. So practice in your life non-resistance. Move toward what you want versus fighting the ties that bind you to what you don't want.
Mama told me when I was young,
thought about the cost of kindness? I've heard it said before, and I believe it's true, that you don't really appreciate what comes too easy. If you don't have to work for something, it can easily slip through your fingers without even any appreciation. Think about the expression, from shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves in three generations. Somebody worked hard for a fortune, left it to somebody else who did okay, and then it was squandered by the third generation who didn't really have to work for it, didn't really have to do anything. Being kind, though, seems to take more effort than maybe ever before. Or, who knows, maybe that's just how it seems to me from this vantage point and this point in time. Maybe kindness has always cost something, but it's worth the price. And kindness seems to cut both ways. Being kind benefits you, the giver of this kindness, and the recipient, the beneficiary of your kindness. So you shouldn't mistake kindness with weakness either. I think that's another misnomer. I think that's something that gets bantied about erroneously. There's nothing weak about kindness. The cost of kindness is worth the price and the effort to go out of your way to be a little bit kinder today. And it will pay you back tenfold, at least. At least. Og Mandino advised that you and I treat every person we meet if they would be gone at midnight. And if we did that, and the person who snubbed you today, the person you don't really care for, or somebody, a stranger, somebody that might be in need, I'm not really sure, I'm not going to offer, that person that we ignore, what if they were gone tomorrow? So the cost of kindness is the price, I guess, of peace of mind. And by the way, peace of mind is never on sale, but it's always worth it.
I am not cloying. I am not needy. I don't care what you think. You're not getting to me.
You're not getting to me.
I've lived a life that's full. I traveled each and every highway and more, much more than this. I did it my
Whatever you can conceive and believe, you can achieve. These were Napoleon Hill's words from over 100 years ago, and they're just as true today as they were then. You really can conceive and believe anything and achieve it. And you might ask, well, wait a minute. What if I'm 63 years old and 4'11", and I conceive that I want to be an NBA center? Trust me, you'll not believe it. Absent the belief, you'll not achieve it. So the formula's got to be intact. See, the formula checks itself. It's a miniature philosophy that checks itself. When you can conceive and believe, you can achieve. It doesn't say whatever you can conceive, you can achieve. No, Napoleon Hill knew that would be folly. That would be false. That's not true. You have to be able to believe it. And what's more, once in a while, you might have to rely on the belief of somebody else. The belief of somebody in your life, in your sphere, or a stranger that pushes you towards, not the railroad track, but pushes you towards something great in your life. Borrow their belief for a little while. Borrow my belief in you for a little while, and pretty soon you'll be able to stand on your own two feet and go, yeah, I get it. Whatever I can conceive and believe, I not only can, but will achieve. And once you have a track record, it becomes easier and easier. Like a well-worn track, it becomes more familiar, this concept of going to pen and paper and conceiving and believing and then achieving. I want to thank you for being here. For David Webb and myself, I'm Chris Story, reminding you to live the good life. You look forward, you learn from your past, but never forget, this is what matters right here in the present.